I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Kaylin.
And you are tuning in to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from the very top of Burnaby Mountain.
We're stoked to be your host for the next hour, exploring local and global events using sociological perspectives. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, this is Kaylin. Welcome to Sociologic. I hope you're doing all right tonight. Thank you so much. I'm sorry to say that today my co-host Rebecca is not here. She is across the pond in the UK right now, possibly staying up, but I do hope that she's asleep because it's quite late over there. Today we will be talking a little bit about the Anthropocene, but first I'd like to say that we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, and the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh nations. We're on the top of Burnaby Mountain here talking today. I'm pleased to say that I have a good friend of mine on as a co-host today. Julian, you want to say hi? Let's see if your mic's on.
Hi. Is it working?
Talk again.
Hey.
It is not working. Let me try again. Talk?
Hello?
Yeah, no, that's not working. Well, you can come over here and talk on my mic. So this is my friend Julian. Julian, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, okay?
Sounds good. My name's Julian. I've been living in BC pretty much all my life. I go to school here on top of Burnaby Mountain for resource and environmental management.
Heck yeah. So something that Julian asks me each day is to share my fun fact. And so today I'm going to turn the question on him and say, Julian, how about you share your fun fact with me?
That is very evil. I don't really have a fun fact, but I do have a bit of a fun joke. Looking around, being in the studio for the first time, I'm seeing all these sound reduction panels. It made me think, in a church, if you have a rock band playing, the sound will just be bouncing everywhere, every which way. But if you get a pigeon in there, the sound kind of just hits corners and dies. And do you know why that is, Kaylin?
I do not know why.
It's because acoustics.
Ha ha ha. I think I'm going to have to kick you off my show now. Well, don't worry, because today I prepared a great fun fact. I found this one out from a friend of mine a couple weeks ago. When we were doing trivia, and it is, did you know that in Latin, Arctic means bears and Antarctic means no bears? And I just find that to be absolutely fascinating, and I love it. So today we're going to be talking about the Anthropocene. For those of you who do not know, the Anthropocene is this geological epoch. Where basically a geological epoch is a period of time where a lot of very similar historic things are happening. So there's like the Ice Age, and right now we're in what's called the Holocene, or previously we're in what's called the Holocene, where it was basically like similar temperatures and stuff, all of that going on. But this new idea has been introduced of the Anthropocene, pushed a lot by anthropologists, other social sciences, and ecological other people. But essentially what is... That mic is not working. It's on.
Use guest mic 2. Other one.
Guest mic 2.
Hello, we're testing the other microphone. Hello, CGSF. I hope you enjoy Sociologic.
Thank you. Cool. It works now. Heck yeah. And yeah, so basically the Anthropocene has been presented as a social idea of the fact that humans have now become a geological force. We're affecting the way that the planet works. We're affecting the environment. We're affecting the weather and all of these things through all of the things, all of the stuff we're doing with our machines and our gases and all of the production that we have going on. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
It's not a fully accepted idea, but a lot of people in like a lot of academic circles use this phrase colloquially to describe what's happening in different places.
I feel like that like ties in really nicely with like my background a little bit with resource and environmental management.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Oh, 100%. So what REM, Resource Environmental Management, aims to do is it's like the applied side of environmental science is the best way that I can really think of it. So we are all dependent on many of the natural resources on this planet, if it's coal, if it's timber, if it's fish, if it's whatever it is that we cannot make ourselves. We depend on this planet for what REM attempts to do is find methods by which to sustainably and equitably manage these resources, and tying that into what Caitlin was mentioning with the Anthropocene, I feel like it's very apt because it shows the extent to which we have control over these things, or at least we think that we have control over these things. But does that kind of
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for sharing that. So basically what we've got in store for you today, we've got a lot of different things that we've read that we're going to be pulling in to talk a little bit about this Anthropocene, the effects that it has, how it connects to sociology, of course, because this is a really social idea of talking about humans and the effect that we have on the world. But many people have this misconception that sociology and anthropology, because today we're definitely pulling from anthropology too, but they're very similar disciplines. There are differences, of course, but what I appreciate about this is how it ties in the natural world, because I love being outside. Being outside is my favorite thing in the world. Julian, you also love being outside, but to kind of I just appreciate that tie between the people and the humans because we are very connected, right? And some of what we're going to talk about is in relation to that and how different academics and thinkers have thought about that. But to start us off, I've got some music for us. This is a song called You Were Born by Cloud Cult. I realized we had Cloud Cult in our library, and it's a very favorite band of my best friend's parents, and I just love this band. They have such pretty lyrics, and their music videos are really cool. So here we go.
So I will never let you go, 'cause you were born to change this life. You were born to chase the light, 'cause you were born. From above, I don't know why we're here, and I don't know how, but I'm here with you now. I am here with you now, 'cause you were born
That was Cloud Cult. That song is so pretty, don't you all think? My friends got to go to their concert, and apparently it was in this cathedral, and they had somebody doing a painting of the cathedral the whole time, and it just sounded so magical and awesome. I really appreciate it. But yeah, shout out to my besties and his parents. That was for you. Okay, so sorry about how that was a little bit of a rough start. We were having some technical difficulties, but we're here and we're ready to talk.
We were talking a little bit about what directions are we approaching this from the topic for today? And I was telling Kaylin that through like REM, a lot of what we attempt to do is marry indigenous practices, but indigenous insights into land and resource usage into our own practices, because often these things are pretty much, they've been doing it for millennia since time immemorial. And by understanding how they go about these things, it can influence how we create our own policies and how we approach their own access to land. A lot of the classes I take have some indigenous element to it. And about a year ago, I was given this reading in my, REM 207 or something to that effect. And yeah, that's how I arrive here. How about you, Kaylin?
Yeah, so I would say that these perspectives are talked a lot more in my anthropology classes, also in my sociology classes too. So basically we've talked about just the idea of exploring the more than human, all of the, like, the natural world as companion to humans, and yeah, it's just been super interesting. I've always loved that section of the class when we talk about that, because I find it super interesting. But yeah, so in my classes, we've discussed that. And then also I've spent lots of time in the outdoors, and it just makes me so happy. Go outside, go touch grass.
Out of curiosity, like, how often in anthropology do you guys bring up like indigenous perspectives?
A lot. In sociology, there's like a bunch of, you may remember from our previous episodes, we started talking about the different lenses in our theory deep dive. Shout out. And we'll continue to talk about more in future episodes. Plug. Basically, there's like all of these different lenses, like feminist lenses, functionalism, constructivism, yada, yada, yada. But there's also indigenous lenses. What's super cool to me, I find, going to school up here, is that that's like a very big element. A lot of my professors work that I've had have worked very closely with indigenous communities, and a lot of their research is centered around that, which I think is really cool and not something that I would find at the other schools that I was applying to in that process, mm-hmm. in the application process. And so I really appreciate that, because I feel like I'm learning a lot of really important things, and I'm glad that's part of the conversation.
Being an American, do you notice that like it's a bit different being like down south of the border as opposed to here?
Very much so, I would say. I just say in like prevalence of what's talked about in certain areas and different spheres. I think I'm from Seattle, so that's not too far away. It's very much, we talk about like genocide and everything that has been done in the American history, but it's not in the same way as here. And I am very aware of like the fact that like the Truth and Reconciliation Act is like not fully, like it's not taking every step that needs to be happening, right? Mm-hmm. But it's cool to see, at least for me, that steps are being taken.
That's kind of interesting. Like one of the things we talk about sometimes is the difference between like going to butcher the actual phrase. I'm going to be paraphrasing with this, but like a victim framework versus a more like active framework of viewing like indigenous lives and indigenous actions. That's like, I like not to toot our own horn a little bit, but I think that's something that maybe in Canada we do a little bit different, is maybe we're trying to move a little bit further away from that victim framework and more.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So to start us out with, one of the ideas that has come about in my classes, I don't think I actually finished describing like how we integrate Indigenous perspectives. Basically, with all of the sociological lenses, it's how you approach the problem. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm looking at bureaucracy, like I can look at that with a feminist lens and an Indigenous lens and a functionalist lens, all of these things that will allow me to pick apart a system or issue or group of people in a different way and come to different conclusions. It's kind of like different glasses you can put on. You can have like your green glasses, your blue glasses, your rainbow glasses, yeah. You know? And so that's really cool because you can look at the same problem and pull it apart. It's kind of like like Legos, right? You can make a bunch of different things with Legos. Legos are awesome. But yeah, so something that we've talked about in our classes a lot is in terms of agency. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this term, Julian?
Yep.
Do you want to do a little introduction to what agency is in terms of like? I can also do it.
I'll try my best. Like very broad sense, agency is one like the ability for one to like try out their own will out in the world to accomplish what they set out to achieve, to not be barred or held back by the world, like surrounding world around them. Please add on to that though.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think it's also just. I think how we've discussed it really is in terms of being able to like make decisions. But when we as humans think about making decisions, it's like, okay, I want to pick up this cup. I'm going to pick up the cup as long as the cup's not on fire, because I might make a different decision if the cup's on fire, right? But in some things, particularly a lot of the work, there's some thinkers that I really appreciate. There's Anna Singh and Michael Hathaway and their whole like international Matsutake mushroom group. It's a bunch of anthropologists internationally connected, because the Matsutake mushroom, it's super cool. It exists mostly in BC and Japan.
And also Oregon and Washington.
And Oregon and Washington. It's also known as the pine mushroom. Julian just did a project on this for his ethnobotany class, which is part of why I wanted to talk to him, because I was like, oh my gosh, mushrooms. But Michael Hathaway is actually a professor at Simon Fraser, and I got to have him for my introduction to anthropology class. Super cool dude. Look up his work. But essentially, they've done a lot of work in a couple of their books, because they've all been publishing books that kind of work together to produce this argument that they're making together. Mm-hmm. About how mushrooms are a companion species to humans, which is interesting because not many people know, but mushrooms aren't like a plant and they're not like an animal. They're something in between. It's really cool. There's the mycelium network, which is basically kind of like, you know how we have Wi-Fi that connects mm-hmm. all of us? It's like mushroom Wi-Fi, but underground. And basically, it allows mushrooms to talk to each other, but also allows all of the other plants in that network to talk to each other, too. It's really cool. Essentially, what the social sciences have taken from this, and like Michael Hathaway and Anna Singh have been doing, is to describe how this is like a social mm-hmm. relationship. You can see how there's arguments that like different emotions that can be felt. It's really interesting and can get super nitty-gritty. But essentially, through this mycelium network, these plants and mushrooms all become part of a social network with social actors, a social actor being basically anybody who is contributing to a social system. So like right now, me and Julian and the radio are all social actors, but also like the tree that's producing the air can be a social actor. You can really get really deep into it about who's all the actors in a situation.
Out of curiosity, how do you like define like so like something like a social action in something like this? Because like when I think social, I'm like thinking there's like emotion to my voice that's being conveyed right now in this moment that's going to you, and this is like a social interaction because of that. It's not like a utilitarian thing. I'm not throwing a brick at you. I'm not like something like that. Like when I think social, I think emotional, and is this something that plants do as well, or like?
I mean, emotion for us is gonna exhibit differently for them, right? But there is like there's been research done that shows how trees will work together to make sure that all of the other trees are getting light, and that different plants are working together to make sure that everything's getting their own nutrients and they can send nutrients to the ones that need it. So in that way, it's just like our conception of what emotion is. We're very much situated in our own form of knowledge, you know? So the way that it will just be hard for us to understand this based on our own experiences. But yeah, essentially that's kind of where I'm coming from with this. But the interesting thing is when the social sciences take on this like more than human idea is when it comes to agency. And I think that's really cool of how like plants having agency and like seeing them as legitimate and actors in the network and as something to be considered in decision making. So say like, I mean, there's lots of dams and rivers and all of these different projects. We're in a world where like environmental action is very important and stuff like that, where considering the perspective of like the nature and what is needed for that has not always been on a voice at the table. There's had to be people lobbying for that voice to be involved. Have you seen that in what you guys work on?
Oh, 100%. And like the idea that was like screaming across my brain as you were talking about that is the idea of reciprocity. Have you like, do you know a little bit about like indigenous perspectives towards plants and reciprocity? And
I feel like a little bit, but share with the class, share with the class.
So I probably before I go any further, I should position myself and say I am very much white. This is me coming at this from an outside perspective. This is something that I'm constantly learning and trying to learn more about. I think it's important that I make that part of myself loud and clear. And I apologize in advance for any mishaps. It's all coming from a place of love. But yeah, sorry, going back to reciprocity. As I understand it, again, indigenous perspectives on this do vary, but this kind of common theme and core theme prevails across a lot of indigenous perspectives, and that being when you take something, say you're out harvesting pine mushroom or something else, you do it as you would taking from like a friend or taking from like a companion or someone in your community. It's not, you're not ripping things out of the ground. You're not taking what cannot be given, what cannot be sustained. And when you do take something, you often leave a gift behind to show that like it is impactful. That it's almost as if you're taking from another person. I hope I'm summing that up well enough. But that's my understanding of reciprocity.
Well, this is just super interesting because of how that connects to something that I was learning about in my international studies class, which is like a wealth and poverty of nations. It's like global economics class, kind of, about how pre-capitalism systems, it was reciprocity. I'm trying to find the three things, but basically there were three forms. There was homesteading, reciprocity, and what's the word for like you give it all to somebody, distribution. And those were like the pre-capitalist system. So it's super interesting how, I mean, obviously that is not necessarily a capitalist ideal of reciprocity. funnily enough,
I would say it's very anti-capitalist.
Yes, exactly. But it's super, that's super interesting. I was just so like, whoa, we've talked about this in my class, but in a totally different way. Because the whole point of that was it was as alternatives. But in thinking about that, the discussions we were having in class were super interesting because people couldn't always because we're living within a capitalist system, thinking about how where you come from affects what you think. People were having trouble understanding some of these ideas because we were coming at it with a capitalist lens. Which is super interesting.
I feel like this might be me just going out on a bit of a limb, though, but it just comes from a place of compassion and humility. It's like, I feel like even, I don't know, like we both grew up in cities. We both like had this kind of ideal ingrained in us from pretty young. Like you go out, you buy things and all that. But I feel like you can, through humility and compassion, you can unlearn a lot of these things. And like these ideas of reciprocity become a lot more palatable, not palatable, but like understandable.
For sure. Reciprocity is definitely something that I've been thinking about practicing a lot. I was learning about it in that class, and then I went and stayed with my friends, and they have this super cool system set up with their roommates where each day of the week somebody else cooks. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's so awesome of how, like, each night you're guaranteed a dinner with friends, because that's not necessarily how mine is set up, because we didn't really know each other going into it, but they all knew each other going into it, so that worked better for them. But I just thought that was super cool, and I just appreciate the work that my friend has done to make that into the community that they are, or make their community into that of such, like, love and reciprocity. I think that's really awesome. So coming up next, we're going to play a song, and then we'll come back to you with more thoughts and ideas. Welcome back to CJSF. I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Julian. And that was Purple Starfish by Trevor Sloan. Going out to Aiden all the way out in Toronto. Big props to you. Tuning in at 10:30 at night on a weeknight.
Ooh, past my bedtime.
Oh, God, mine too.
So coming up next, we are going to be doing a little bit of a dive following along to this piece. It's by Vanessa Watts, who's from Queen's University. It's called Indigenous Place Thought and Agency Amongst Humans and Non-Humans. And then in parentheses, First Woman and Sky Woman Go on a European World Tour, with an exclamation point. It's a fun title. Julian, when did you read this?
About a year ago. Yeah, like in REM 207, given off by Cliff Atlio, probably one of my favorite profs in REM.